Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. Yes, it is us. We still exist. And I know it's been a long time, but I am your host, Alejandro Rojas. I'm still around. And I am joined by Martin Flying Squirrel Willis.
Well, yes. I guess I probably should explain why you said that.
Well, although you didn't really, it's too bad you didn't exhibit, properties of a flying squirrel, or else you might not have gotten hurt, but you might have been, I don't know what else, something that falls through the air more akin to a rock.
Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like.
So you fell off a ladder? Is that what
it was? No, I was on top. I was on the third floor of my house, and I fell down to the first floor roof.
Oh, my. So that's like two floors.
Yeah, and I was up. I was basically shoveling snow. You know, we still have a lot of snow. It is melting. But I shoveled down to ice, and I had a bucket of ice melt in my hand. When I slipped on the top roof, the bucket is what pulled me over the edge, and down I went. And it was a horrible really lucky to be alive. And I just started moving around, in mid-week ago. So, it's been quite a fall experience.
Well, it's scary. Of course, it's scary. Yeah, to hear that you hurt yourself so badly, and you're doing better. That's why I'm being silly about it, but awfully frightening.
But you know what? I am counting my blessings. I really am so lucky. I didn't land in a way to break a lot of bones or anything like that. I just or die. You know, I mean, I just really was lucky. Very lucky.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do it again.
Good. Good. Don't do it again. That's bad.
Right. Thank you.
I don't want you getting hurt. I want you staying healthy. And you don't got to be getting on the roof. For goodness sakes, hire somebody.
I know. I'm in the middle of nowhere.
I wouldn't get on the roof. Anyone. You kidding?
What's that?
I wouldn't get on any roof.
Yeah. Well, I'm sworn to never get... I made a pact with myself to never do it again, and I just have to stick with that. But I really don't want to ever do it again. Never want to fall again, that's for sure.
Well, I guess we should move on. Our guest today, I don't know why I feel like saying it kind of like with a Lego Batman voice. Our guest is Nick Redfern. On 365 days of UFOs.
Well done. Well done.
I saw the Batman logo movie, and it was really good. It's so funny. So that is my little... This isn't a paid promotion. Too bad. It isn't. But I'm just inspired by funny Lego Batman.
Yeah. Oh, Lego Batman. Yeah, I saw that advertised. Yeah. That book I read. I read through Nick's book. It's really interesting how he has it laid out. These are accounts of UFO sightings for every day of the year on different years, of course. But very, very fascinating how he did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is a really fun book, a sighting a day, and we'll talk to him more about why he did this book, what gave him the idea, and some of the cool stuff in it. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Nick Redfern's always fun to talk to, and he's, of course, a favorite among people out there. So, yeah, so this will be a lot of fun talking to him about this book. Really, really cool.
Right. Right.
So fun to have him back. And it's fun to be back because, you know, for me, of course, it's been extremely busy. We had the conference and everything, which went very well. The only major issue we had was you and your not being able to be there because your flight was canceled. But, you know, once we figured out that was going to happen because you let us know before the conference, we kind of did a group thing where I had to let the guys know. There was crying. The women, oh, my gosh, they were really devastated. But we kind of just, you know, we all took a deep breath and we said, we can still do this. You know, at least he's still alive. Little did we know that you almost died. And we moved forward and were able to complete a successful conference.
Yeah, you know, if I made it out there somehow, I wouldn't have fallen off the roof. Mm-hmm. See how that worked? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And actually, getting into the news a little early, it's gone viral. We've got a gajillion stories out there right now about us having given Tom DeLonge the UFO Researcher of the Year Award.
Right.
He was not able to be there, but he did send us a video response that we played, and we posted this along with our video showing why we gave him the award on YouTube, and that's gone super viral. So there's just a gajillion stories out there. Honestly, a lot of them are making fun of Tom DeLonge. Luckily, not us, but Tom DeLonge, which is actually kind of sad because very few of them. There's a really good CNET article that focuses on the details of why we gave him the award. Because and some people question this, I think, but well, there's no doubt. You can see this online. But I think, you know, it's really important what he did. That I ask people who are like, why did you give it to Tom DeLonge? Just because he's a rock star? No. Because of all the work that we were able to see that he did and how he has taken this topic. He was able to have this discussion with these high-level individuals. Nobody's gotten to have a discussion like he's had with these high-level guys, these generals, Executive Vice President of Lockheed Skunk Works. I mean, nobody's had a conversation at that level. So it's an event. It's a historical event, really, for this field in general, let alone quite an accomplishment by this one person who is now also doing these nonfiction projects that are going to be coming forward. In fact, watch our social media because we're going to have some giveaways. Luckily, Tom's people, they've been real happy with us, so they got a hold of us recently, and we'll probably be launching either today or tomorrow. Sometime this week, we're going to be giving some giveaways related to the book and everything, and we're going to have a discount code for his nonfiction UFO book that's coming up here, I think just next week or at the end of the week it releases. So check out our social media for a discount for the book and for some freebies. Regarding the book, but you know, I ask people who question it, who else has done something, you know, at this level or better this year? What UFO researcher has done some great piece of UFO research this year? And I do feel that, you know, Tom, most people agree when you put it in that perspective, which is exactly the perspective of the award. That the awards deserved. So I think there's just a lot of people that get frustrated. And that's okay. I guess, you know, there's always controversy. And, you know, I don't think we've ever given an award that didn't prove to be controversial at some level. So that's okay. We could take the heat on this. I just, you know, we genuinely believe it's deserved. It's not to buddy up with Tom DeLonge. Like we told him, we want to present him the award whether or not he can provide us a video or be at the symposium to accept it. We just feel that it's deserved and we wanted to provide it to him. So at least it's coming from a genuine place when we do award it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one person I can think of that has done, you know, some work, some really good work last year and continues to do it, is Paul Dean down in Australia?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Paul Dean has done a lot. Now, arguably, all he's done is shared previous researchers' information. And that's that's so it's not unique in that. However, he is finding research that wasn't widely disseminated before, and he's putting the pieces together and sharing those pieces he's finding, which I agree are highly, highly significant. So, and as can be demonstrated, because we feature his work so much. I mean, I've had him on a couple times this year, and we've had him. He's been an integral part to some of the research we've we've shown on our Open Minds magazine videos that we've put out there. So I agree. He would be a close second. But putting it together, I did feel as maybe a close second. And I also want to work towards doing some other things around that. I guess I'll put it that way without revealing too much, especially because who knows how successful I'll be putting some stuff together around that. But, yeah, we've recognized him quite a bit, and I want to continue to do so. But I would agree he would be the best argument for an alternative.
Yeah. So am I going to get to do any news this week, or is you just
Ed, do you have some?
I had a story lined up, but you know.
You did, so you can't.
But
prepared?
You know, you're going pretty well. You know, if you want to just continue.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about the conference and the controversy and stuff like that. However, yes, Martin, we are definitely moving into the news because that's why you're here. Well, you're here for more than that, but because also it's so fun to talk to you about UFO news. So let's transition over to Martin Willis presents UFO News.
Thank you very much. So,
take it away.
This is a low flying UFO spotted over Gettysburg. Now, this is a Gettysburg, the famous Gettysburg, where there was a major Civil War battle fought. Interesting historic town, Gettysburg Address, blah blah blah. Well, this happened back in recently. It was February 26, a few days ago, basically, where this witness was out on his porch smoking a cigarette, and he noticed a light coming like across the sky. He guessed the speed range of about 800 miles an hour and up. Now, he thought the object was only about 1,000 feet up. And, you know, I almost have to argue the point where if an object was only 1,000 feet up, you would hardly be able to see it go by at 800 miles an hour, just in my opinion. Again, he was guessing it was about that far up. And he also thought it was about 800 to 1,000 feet long. Now, these are quite some incredible claims here. He saw a bright line of lights, and I believe he said it had kind of like a shape. It dipped up toward the back or something like that. I know I read that somewhere in the article. And he watched it basically travel across the sky. There is no pictures. He wasn't able to take a picture of this. He did hear a very low humming sound, which is also kind of curious as well. At first, he thought it might have been a jet, but after a while, he figured out, you know, there's just no way that it could have been that. And he said there was at least 10 or 12 lights, and they were all bright, bright, as he exclaimed, white, no red, blue, and none were blinking. And so that was basically I think it was close, like a unknown object or something like that. I don't really see any conclusion on this particular one.
Yeah, I think maybe they're still investigating. Yeah, I don't think Roger really said, but I wonder if there's a bit of a mistype from the witness, too, because they said the object was between 8 to 1,000 feet long, and it was also 8 to 1,000 feet up. I wonder if they meant it was 8 to 1,000 feet up, not long. Because, yeah, those numbers are pretty odd. And then 800 miles
saying.
Per hour.
Yeah.
And like you said, if it's really low, it's going to look like it's moving much faster if it's moving past you than if it is a larger object further away. So, yeah, some of the numbers don't add up, but it's still interesting. I guess this guy was an Army veteran.
Mm-hmm.
or yeah. is an Army veteran. So, yeah, very interesting, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any other ones you want to talk to you about, too?
Well, I can if you'd like me to continue.
Yeah, go for it. Do it. Because it's been a while. It's been over a month, for goodness sakes. Last time we were talking, it was just after the holidays, I guess.
I think you are right. Oh, my goodness, you're right. Well, this is I guess you'd call it a USO, not a UFO. Mm. This happened in Wisconsin. It happened last year, November 28th. And it was an incident involving a triangular shaped object around Green Bay in Wisconsin. Suwamico is the name of the little Suwamico is the name of the town. And the witness says that he could hear a muffled jet sound, and which is kind of interesting. And it was a very dark color, and it had blue flashing lights. And I guess it came up out of the water and was at about 500 feet. He thought it was about 1,000 feet away. And the side of the triangle appeared to be about 100 to 150 feet long. And now his thoughts were that he believed that it was operated by the Air Force. I don't know where he really came up with that idea. So this one was, I think it... it was closed as a UAV, unknown UAV category.
Hmm. Interesting. So the investigator felt, I guess it was a man-made object. And I think they've experimented with things like that, that can go in and out of the water, fly both ways. So interesting.
Yeah. Have you heard that they've experimented with things like that?
Yeah, actually. And the reason I saw most of this is that they review that in a section of the investigation that the SAU, that the group did in investigating the Puerto Rico video. They have a section where they talked about the different man-made objects that could be. And I've seen a story, too, I remember, or maybe even a video of this Navy experiment. I think they even have them that could launch from a submarine and stuff. But
wow,
I'm not so sure that they've actually built anything, at least that we know about. Of course, if they have built something and it was top secret, then we wouldn't know about it. They would be testing it out there. So, yeah.
Test things, do you think, in the Great Lakes?
I wouldn't think so. Not the Great Lakes.
Yeah. So, I don't know the situation with the air bases out that way or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't think they do that sort of thing there. So hard to know. Really interesting case. What about, and I want to ask you, because I think you've looked at this, we have one titled North Carolina Witness Unsure, UFO or Drone. This is in Wake Forest, North Carolina. It was captured April 2nd, 2016, so almost a year ago. It was about 4:30 p.m., and so it's light out. And this person is near a lake and a river, and they see large birds a lot. But he saw this object that he started to think, hey, that doesn't really look like a bird, but it doesn't look like a plane either. They said it was about 200 to 400 feet above the horizon, and they were able to capture a couple of video clips of this object. And it doesn't look like a plane, and it doesn't look like a bird. It's elongated, so I guess... maybe a party balloon type of, I guess it could be, but this one's just kind of weird because it's not readily identifiable. Now, it doesn't move like it might be something alien, but I don't know what it is. There's at least one commenter who said, I operate drones and this is not a drone. I remember we talked about this before and you looked at the video. Do you remember it?
I do, yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know. You know, it's an oddball. I mean, it could be a Mylar balloon, but if so, you know, a very strange shape.
Yeah.
But I guess you could make anything you want from Mylar if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It doesn't look, it's sort of like a blob. You know, I don't know if it really could be a drone. It's an oddball one, that's for sure.
Yeah, pretty weird. And then I have one more news story. Did you have any more? Do you mind if
No,
I'm
all done.
okay. So here's the other one I want to talk about before we get to Nick Redfern. And I'm writing a story on it. I was going to try to write it for Friday, got busy, so I had to leave. So I'll have this up later today with the whole transcript. But this is George Bush, who's been in the news a lot lately.
Right.
But he was on Jimmy Kimmel Live the other day. And like Jimmy Kimmel does, which we love so much, he asked George Bush about UFOs. So George Bush, now through the WikiLeaks, the same ones that, you know, revealed information that we were able to, why we gave the award to Tom DeLonge, and the same one we were referencing, Open Mind, in a related story. So we saw that there was some conversation about Hillary Clinton coming on Jimmy Kimmel, and they were working on the script and what they were going to talk about in regards to UFOs. And sharing information about what Bill Clinton said and him and John Podesta and their interest in UFOs. That's why they linked to one of my stories. I'm so honored. That's why I keep repeating it. But anyway, so most likely there was some background here where George Bush was aware he was going to be asked about UFOs. And in fact, Jimmy Kimmel started off like he usually does, you know, asking if he went through the UFO documents. Before he could even finish his sentence, Bush said maybe. And then he said after the question was finished that it's kind of funny because his daughters ask about that all the time. So really? Jimmy says, well, do you tell your daughters anything? And he says, no. And he's like, well, he essentially asked him, well, did you look at files? And he's like, maybe. He's like, well, would you tell me what was in these files? No. It was really funny. He just kept saying no, no. And he said, well, now that you're out of office, you can do anything you want, right? And Bush said, true, but I'm not telling you. I'm not telling you nothing. Interesting statement, wow. Huh? He just kept saying, no, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah,
he's
it sure
like,
is.
And even with the question, well, if you did look at them, would you tell me or your daughters? And he's like, no. So, but in regards to whether he looked, he said, maybe. So, that's really weird. I mean, he could be joking, but of course he's not like Obama where you know he's joking. Even Obama does straight face, but Obama is arguably, I think, one of the funnier presidents we've had. He kind of acts like a comedian where he will laugh and smile afterwards and stuff like that. With George Bush, he's a little more poker face, so you can't tell sure what if he's being serious or not. He does laugh here and there. So this one is a little bit harder to definitely say he's joking, whereas normally I think they typically are. So, of course, someone tweeted me about this and said, hey, when's Ben going to look at this? And or is Ben going to look at this? Ben Hansen, who has analyzed these videos in the past. In fact, that's what he talked about at our UFO Congress. And I said, well, I think you just kind of asked him because you included him, tagged him on this tweet. And then Ben responded and said, well, looks like I've got some more work to do. So at some point, Ben Hansen will analyze this to see what he thinks because he does, you know, he's got that law enforcement background and he does this kind of analysis of what we can tell there by what they say. So that'll be interesting. But it was a very interesting appearance. Were you aware of this?
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Great.
Is the video up on anywhere?
It is. So I'll have my story up, probably up really soon, and I'll send you the link and I'll embed the video in it. But it is on the Jimmy Kimmel YouTube site.
Wow. No, that's great. And, you know, I almost wonder if Ben does not really have to do that much work on this one because doesn't sound like there's any real denying going on there.
Yeah. True. So, he probably, you know, yeah. Plus, it's short, luckily, for Ben because it takes him a long time to do this work because he looks at every single movement, the number of breaths are taken, all of this sort of thing. So, definitely fun. This is really cool. It's a great development. So, cool.
I think Ben said he had something like 40 hours in one of those films.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for the news. You got anything else, buddy?
I am done.
Well, I'm so happy that you survived your fall. Please don't try the flying squirrel impression any longer. And
I will try not to.
You keep yourself safe, buddy.
And also to the people that I missed out in at the conference, I'm really sorry I couldn't get out there. I'm going to drive next year, for sure.
You can still fly, just, you know.
Well, I like having my car, and I think I'm going to take an extended time out that way.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah,
soak in some sun a little bit, get out of the snow.
You guys, because I read about places that it's cold. It's already summer here. Summer's already here. Mm-hmm. I mean, this weekend was 75, which is great for us. Too cool for some Arizonans because they're so thin blood. But sunny skies, you know, it was a little cloudy, actually, but not anymore. It's now sunny and in the upper 70s. So, yeah,
I'm feeling for you. Yeah.
It's good stuff. All right. So we'll talk to you soon then.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Let's go ahead and talk to Nick Redfern. I am happy to welcome back to the show Nicholas Redfern. Hello.
Hey, Alejandro. How's it going?
Fun. Good.
Good.
Your email says Nicholas, so I decided to use that.
that's actually, I forget why it says that, but I think Nick wasn't available when I was setting that account up years ago. I've had that's actually my second email, just not the primary one, but I've had it so long that I didn't bother closing it down. But I do remember it was something to do with the fact that N-I-C-K was taken. So
I see. Well, Nicholas is a nice name.
Yeah, I don't mind which it is. I've been called worse, you know.
Right. So, although you're generally well-liked in the field, I don't know that I've heard one person say a bad thing about you.
Oh, you've been looking in the wrong places. I get a lot of online debates, shall we say.
Right. Well, online, everybody's always talking crap about each other. But
thing is, you know, I mean, I don't mind a good online fight, you know, because I think, you know, it's one of these situations where debate, you know, is a good thing.
Right.
You know, some people shy away from it because they don't want confrontation. But the way I look at it is that if we're going to get answers, then we really need not just to share stuff, but, you know, sort of point out problems with this person's theory or that one. And really, you know, because we're all looking, at the end of the day, we're all part of a community looking for answers. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a problem, really, to, you know, have a full-on debate where, you know, sometimes tempers get raised or whatever. That doesn't matter if it helps us get a clearer picture of what's going on. So.
True. But there are some people who just like to personal attacks, and I think they do it for fun, just to push people's buttons.
Oh, yeah, well, there are some people like that in ufology, and I deal with them sometimes as well. The problem is, it's not so much for me, it's a problem dealing with it. It's a problem when I find that, you know, I'm debating with these people, and then I just realize, you know, I've just lost 2 hours on the work day, you know
oh,
what I mean?
Oh, right. Yeah, I know. That's the other hard part about that. So
that's the thing that is a pain in the neck, not debating. It's just like, you know, I'm sorry, I've got to go. You know, I've got to earn a living. I've got to
learn. Right, exactly. That's why I try to stay off the social media as much as possible, just post stuff and leave. But I'm not very good at it because it ends up eating up my time, like you said. And I love debate. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's just some people with the personal attacks, that's where it gets hard. And, you know, let me ask you this question, because you're someone, you know, when you put yourself out there in this field or probably anywhere where you have kind of you're a public person where, you know, like you being an author, there are a lot of people generates a lot of conversation. There can be a lot of negativity, especially in this field. How do you handle that? Some people really over time, it kind of makes them a bit depressed, or some people, as you've probably seen, have left the field. How do you handle it?
Well, in terms of people who are critical, you know, I just fire back and tell people as it is. You know, it's like if you don't want to hear something negative, You know, then don't say something negative about me. You know, if somebody legitimately has an issue with something that I write or something I say, you know, I'm fine about debating it, you know, and I'll, you know, I'll stand my own ground and forthrightly explain why I think this is the answer to this or et cetera, et cetera. But when it's just people who complain about all this and that, well, you know, like I said, that doesn't get you anywhere. And so sometimes, you know, if I feel like just having a good online argument, I'll, you know, I'll engage them. But other times, you know, if that's all they're doing, then really, you know, there's just no point getting involved because it doesn't get you anywhere. But what I would say is that you're right. Some people have sort of walked away from ufology and disillusioned or, you know, fed up with the scene. But I think, you know, I think a lot of this says, it actually says less about ufologists and it actually says more about human nature. You know, at the end of the day, ufologists are as human as everybody else. And I think if you were to look in any kind of community, you will get this kind of issue going on, you know, where you have people debating and somebody's like, well, I want to be known as the group secretary. No, you can be the vice president or whatever. You know, it's kind of, they want their titles and they want this and they want that. And it becomes very much like an ego kind of thing. So I always tell people, if you want to get into ufology, you know, do so because it's a fascinating subject. But, you know, make sure you've got some thick skin as well because, you know, sometimes the people you have to deal with. And that's the way I look at it is that, you know, I'm a pretty laid-back guy, but not when it comes to, you know, sort of debates. I mean, I tell it as I see it. And if people like it, that's fine. And if it upsets people, that's how it goes. You know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. So.
We've had scientists at our conference and at least a couple where I've said, you know, and they've gotten in debates with people and I've said, you know, I hope that went okay for you. And they're like, oh yeah, I love it. They're like, this is mild compared to our science conventions where we're really going at it on our different theories. So it's to your point.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. You know, you can find this anywhere, and particularly with, you know, the big issue, of course, that causes this is because we're dealing with, like, definitive unknowns. Mm. You know, it's kind of, you know, I also write a lot about cryptozoology, the study of unknown animals. And you can make the same sort of parallels with things like Bigfoot. We don't know what Bigfoot is. We don't know what the Loch Ness Monster is. So, you know, you have a dozen or more theories. In the same way, somebody would argue, you know, we don't really know what happens with alien abductions, or we don't know what's going on at Area 51. So inevitably, this creates friction when somebody says, well, my sources said this is what's happening, and somebody else says, no, that's wrong, you know. But that's what you just have to be prepared for, and if people aren't prepared for it, they're probably better off, you know, watching the news.
Right, doing something else. Because you're right. I mean, you know, especially in this field, you can't do anything that is not controversial to some degree because the whole field is controversial.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So speaking of controversial, I wanted to talk about Roswell because I think this is interesting and kind of fun. And I've done this before, what you're doing. But at Roswell, it's the 70th anniversary. So hopefully a lot of people are coming. I know lots of people from Phoenix are coming. And I'll be speaking for the Daily Roswell Record again. Of course, there's a museum event where there's lots of great speakers. There's Don Schmidt and Stanton Friedman and I think Yvonne Smith and Travis Walton, a bunch of others over there, great people. But you're speaking, I think you're the only ufologist I saw on the list, but you're speaking for Guy Malone, who's a great guy. I've met him.
Yeah.
I've spoken for one of his events. But what's unique about his event is that they are it's kind of a religious one where they have the feeling that aliens are demons.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you know, I don't mind speaking for a group that has views different to mine. Mm-hmm. Because again, you know, I think if you kind of sort of, I mean, ironically, we're talking about religion now. If you just preach to the converted, so to speak, you know, that doesn't get us anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when Guy said to me, would you be interested in speaking for my conference, you know, I didn't have any hesitation because I don't feel uncomfortable speaking for groups of people who have radically different views to mine. Mm-hmm. I'm totally fine with that. And I think, again, you know, it's a conference to, again, to try and figure out what happened at Roswell and, you know, unravel all the new leads and potential sources that may still be coming through, which might finally provide us with an answer. You know, and if at that conference we get into a debate about the merits of whether, you know, Roswell was a secret experiment, whether it was extraterrestrials, whether it was, you know, something more along the demonic angle, you know, I'm happy to debate those areas. And I think the audience like that kind of situation when you're sort of, getting to it, you know, back and forth with each other. So, again, you know, I think it, wherever you come from on Roswell or any case, you know, tell it as you see it and don't worry about that because, you know, if somebody else has got a deeply held belief system, they're not apologizing for it, you know, so why should you? So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the conference and, it'll be interesting to see how it all goes down.
Yeah, I commend you for that. I think that's great. I agree. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of this whole everybody, you know, some people do want to preach to the choir. Others, and it's funny that this is religious based and we use these terms, but, you know, others like me, I would rather talk to people who don't know anything about this field who are curious to give them a lot of information they don't have. So I think that's a great attitude that you have. And, you know, Guy Malone, I really like him. They're one of the events he put together that I spoke at, some other UFO researchers spoke at, and we all were not totally clear on the nature of things, and it wasn't until the end that, you know, this kind of the religious aspect came out, and a lot of the speakers were really upset, but I kind of felt like, what the heck, you know, it's just another topic, and to your point, you know, they're not going to get upset about or all in a huff about what their beliefs are and how theirs are different than yours, so why should we?
Yeah, and I think one of the things when this kind of issue comes up, I always tell people to remember that the term UFO, the U, regardless of what people think, the U still stands for unidentified. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't know what the phenomenon is. You know, I mean, although the overriding popular theory is the extraterrestrial one, I mean, if you look at the advances that are being made today in things like quantum physics in relation to, like, multi-dimensions and things like that, you know, we could actually be looking at something that actually isn't coming from some faraway star system, but that kind of zips in and out of our reality. Mm-hmm. You know, then you have, granted, some of the more controversial theories, like the demonic one, like the time-traveling one. So, in other words, when we're dealing with definitive unknowns, I think it's important to get the information out. But also to demonstrate to people, you know, this is my conclusions, or your conclusion, or whoever's conclusions, based on the data. You know, and sometimes data changes, and you know, people's views change. That's one of the things I always find a little bit odd about certain factions in ufology, where it's almost like you're not expected to change your views. You know, he's the abduction researcher who thinks this. She's the, you know, the conspiracy theorist who thinks this is held at Area 51. He's the person who thinks it's aliens mutilating cattle. Somebody else is the one who thinks it's a government mutilating cattle. And it's like, people are almost expected to carry that torch forever. But, I mean, it's like, you know, you don't watch the same TV shows at, say, 30 as you do when you were 10, you know. your clothing tastes change, you know, your music changes. And I think sometimes in ufology, you're expected to rigidly uphold something, even in the face of new data. You know, people valiantly hang on to some hoax documents. No, it's real, you know, and well, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's, you know, if somebody investigates something and then further down the line it's shown to be something else, if you legitimately point out why you thought it was ABC and it turned out to be DEF, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. That's what investigations are for, to get to the bottom of things, and sometimes it can take a long time, And also, until you reach that final correct answer, you can often find yourself in going in all sorts of weird directions, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing that we do is write a lot. So the good thing about writing is that it causes you, it forces you to investigate what you're writing about. And of course, you're a prolific writer in books and, you know, online articles. So you're just, I'm amazed at how much you're able to get out there. But it's kind of cool that it does, and I do appreciate that it forces us to delve into these things and to really investigate every thing that we're writing about. And I often find that when I follow things to the core, it's a DEF situation instead of the ABC I might have been expecting. It's just funny how often that happens. Does that happen a lot to you, too, that your expectations are kind of like blown out the window?
Well, when I get, you know, whether it's from a witness or it's a document or it's a rumor or whatever, you know, I always just try and just follow the story mm-hmm. and not try and, you know, make leaps and jumps and put threads together that aren't there. I just follow where it goes. And mm-hmm. if it takes me somewhere, that's great. If it hits a brick wall, when you try and find a way around that brick wall. But, you know, from my perspective, you know, when you talk about sort of writing and things like that, I try and sort of be pretty structured. I like to sort of work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, with the writing and whether it's the books or articles or whatever. And then I take evenings off. I don't work at evenings. 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, the laptop goes into sleep mode, and it doesn't come out of sleep mode till 8 o'clock Monday morning. I just totally switch off to have a normal, you know, normal fun life, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, that works well because I don't get sort of burned out by the subject, you know. And I think that's an important thing, is that as fascinating as an interesting and intriguing as the UFO subject is, I have seen on many occasions, and this isn't meant as a criticism, but on many occasions I've seen people kind of get sucked into it so deeply that it goes from being an interest to a passion, finally to like a full-blown unhealthy obsession where everything in their life is dominated by the subject. Now, if people like that, they want to be on UFOs full on 24/7, I don't have an issue with that. It's just from my perspective, I couldn't do that. I'd get burned out. And I know of friends who've gone down that road, and eventually they've just backed away because it was just impacting too much. You know, everything going on in their life was sort of seen as being connected somehow, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, there's a lot of things within ufology to think about that are like that, you know. And I think, but again, it just demonstrates part of, you know, human character rather than it does anything particularly about ufologists, you know. Like I said, I'm sure people who collect stamps or something like that, you know, they argue over, how did this person get that one? And it's the last one in the collection I need,
yeah.
You know. And it's the same sort of thing, really.
Right, exactly. So obsessions can be detrimental no matter what they are. So you have to be careful and have perspective. In fact, there's a guy here who baseball cards is his thing, and then he's gotten in trouble for doing too much baseball card stuff at work, so practically anything.
Well, yeah, that's like a classic example, yeah. Uh-huh. And but again, I think, you know, doing research, what I try and do, I try and sort of take like an investigative research approach, you know. When I first left school, I worked on a music and fashion and entertainment magazine back in England called Zero, and you know, that sort of really got me into journalism. They sort of taught me how to sort of structure a story and construct it so, you know, it pull in the reader and things like that. But also interviewing and investigating techniques. And I've always tried to apply that to sort of go in with an open mind, not from the perspective of, I'm going to prove this is extraterrestrial, I'm going to prove this is a classified aircraft or whatever. I just go where it takes me, and I don't feel I'm someone who really flies the flag of any particular theory more than any other. I just go where the evidence goes, you know, and that might mean that, you know, one day we find that, yes, extraterrestrials are really flying around, but they have nothing to do with cattle mutilations. You know what I mean? I don't feel I need to kind of place it all under one banner, which is, you know, come hell or high water, you know.
Which is great. And, you know, what I really like about that, that you're this way, you know, Greg Bishop and I had a conversation that was very similar recently on the show, but that you're like this, but you're still in demand as far as speaking goes, because a lot of times those people who do have kind of a hard set worldview, who preach to it and their goal is to kind of convince people of it, they're often the more popular, you know, when it comes to speaking engagements. But people love hearing your talks, where even though you aren't like that. I feel like that, and I feel like sometimes people get bummed, and I don't know if you've experienced this, when they come to me and they ask me, well, what is this? What is that? And I'm like, I don't know. I can share you the information or what's out there, but I don't know necessarily what these might be. And they look at you like they're really bummed because they want the answer. Does that happen to you?
Well, sometimes. But, I mean, when you talk about, you know, trying to convince the audience of this or that, I don't think trying to convince the audience of what my conclusions are is actually a responsible thing to do, because it's right. Like you're pushing the information down their throat and almost demanding they take your point of view. What I try and do is demonstrate to the audience, you know, for a conference or like a, you know, just a group lecture, is to demonstrate and show the audience what I've found, then explain to them the sort of the tentative conclusions I've, or full-on conclusion that I've reached based upon my studies. And, you know, it's like, for example, as you know, last year I spoke at the conference on the Men in Black mystery, and I spoke about the different theories and the cases I'd investigated. But what I would never do is say, I know for sure that the Men in Black are this or that. I can say, I think there's certain evidence which pushes it down this particular pathway. And I think that's, as I said, that's a responsible way to do it. And I think sometimes, you know, people don't actually like it when they're lectured at. You know, I don't think I lecture to people. I share information. You know, I don't lecture at people, you know, demand that they accept this or that. I share what I've uncovered. And I think, you know, maybe that's why people enjoy having me speak at their events, because, you know, I try and present however many sides of the argument there are, you know, I'm fine about discussing them. But I'm not in the business of speaking at conferences just to say what the audience wants to hear, you know, or what I think is going to sell more books. No, I'm just going to say it as it is. And if people like it, that's fine. If they come away thinking, you know, whatever, I mean, and that's fine too. I think, you know, that's what we should, we need to take a responsible approach to how we lecture, because, you know, you go to some conferences and the egos are so high through the roof that the people who are, you know, with those big egos giving their lectures will tell you that they know this for sure or this happened, you know, when they don't. It's just their held opinion, really.
Mm-hmm. Amen, brother.
Another reference. Eh? Amen.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess before I leave that, before we get into your book, which I'm excited to talk about, I just guess I should ask, if someone were to say, you know, let's say at the conference or you know, in Roswell, you know, do you believe that the aliens are demons? What would be your response?
No, I don't believe aliens are actually demons, but where I do agree with the people who hold that view is on a couple of points. One, you know, a lot of my views on the origins of the UFO phenomenon, you know, sort of probably started to change when I was like my 20s, early 30s, something like that. And, you know, I sort of came more around to like a John Keel's approach, that we're dealing with something that kind of coexists and with us and flits in and out of our reality. Now, you know, people who believe in the demonic angle would say that's what these entities do as well. You know, they have, from their perspective, they would view it as hell, I guess. But they would take the view that, you know, hell is kind of like another place that kind of coexists with us, you know what I mean? That's probably mm-hmm. the approach they would take. And I actually share that approach, that we are probably dealing with something that is like multidimensional. And I also agree with them in the sense that I think there are certain aspects of the UFO phenomenon which are clearly deceptive and manipulative. You know, where certain cases seem to be like almost staged for our benefits, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a bizarre kind of theatre played out. Like these cases over and over again of people driving down the road and they see aliens taking soil samples. You know, there's so many cases like that that, you know, it's like, how many times do they need to take soil samples and why are they always being seen doing it? You know, it's almost like it's being played out for our benefit. And I would agree with the people who believe the demonic angle, that it is kind of deceptive and it could be manipulative in a sinister way. But where I differ is that just because I think that it could be manipulative and deceptive and that it coexists with us in some bizarre realm of existence, that doesn't mean I believe in, you know, horned figures with pitchforks, you know, and fiery pits and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, if people believe that, that's fine. I don't have an issue with people who believe that. My only issue is with you know, different religions is not what people believe. It's the impact it has on other people if they don't want to get involved with it. You know, I have no problem with somebody who has any religious persuasion, but I don't want them knocking on the door at 6 o'clock at night. You know, if I wanted to find out about it, I would do it. You know, I wouldn't need somebody to, you know, to come knocking on the door when I'm eating dinner or whatever. So, yeah, I guess some of my views are similar to theirs in terms of the kind of like the modus operandi of the phenomenon. But not, you know, I don't think, you know, the greys are sort of beaming out of hell or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did actually write extensively about this about 7 or 8 years ago in a book called Final Events, which is a very weird book. I got onto the story thanks to a priest named Ray Beauchet. Ray has a really interesting background. Not only is he a priest, a Christian priest, in the 1980s, he ran the Nebraska chapter of MUFON. He was the state director. And in the early 90s, he met representatives from the Department of Defense from a group that was actually pursuing that angle. They were like a little think tank type group. It wasn't like an agency like the NSA or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was a small think tank. And they were looking into this angle of, is the UFO phenomenon sort of demonic and occult and supernatural based? And it was a fascinating, I wrote the book not because to endorse the demonic angle, because I thought it was fascinating that there was this small group in government being funded to actually investigate the stuff we've just been talking about. But I pointed out in there, in the story, that, you know, this is not my story. I pointed out, you know, I'm taking a step back and telling the story of, not that I believe it, but how and why this group came to believe it and what their conclusions are. So again, you know, I think, you know, there's no doubt that the demonic angle has quite a significant following, really. You know, there's people like Tom Horn's books and things like that. You know, they sell incredibly well. So, you know, in that sense, we are dealing with an aspect of ufology that perhaps a lot of people don't think about, but which, if you look into it, really, you can find threads here and there, you know, in support of that theory.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting. Well, and Guy Malone's events are always very well organized, and I don't know what the attendance is like, so it'll be interesting to find out from you how that goes.
Yeah, I actually spoke at his 2007 event, and and that was quite well attended, really. And as you say, guy's always on time. It makes me laugh, really, because he's like, you know, if you're like 30 seconds, 10 seconds over, it's like, you know, your time's up. You almost imagine, you know, you got like the shepherd's stick, you know, pulling you off by the neck off stage or whatever.
I know how that is. Pulling people off stage can be difficult.
Yeah.
So let's get to your book. Your latest book just came out, well, I was going to say last month, but it's already March. So it came out in January. 365 Days of UFOs, A Year of Alien Encounters. And this is really 365 stories, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And basically, it's like whenever I write a book, you know, I don't just sort of write a book from the perspective of being a writer. You know, I'm also a reader of books as well. And so I always try and put myself in the position of not just the writer, but the reader, and think, you know, what would I like to write about that I haven't done yet? And, you know, most of my books, if not all of them, apart from this one, have been on specific subjects, whether Roswell or UFO contactees or the Men in Black. But with this one, the theme is not, you know, any particular or specific theme. The theme is a UFO case for every day. Now, you know, obviously I've got the famous ones like Roswell and Rendlesham Forest and Betty and Barney Hill. But what I've also done is, for the most part, given the reader just previously unknown cases. Now, the reason why I've been able to do that is because, you know, when people are sort of generous enough to share their stories with me, and, you know, they sort of kindly let me use them in the books and so on, very often a lot of those stories don't get used because they don't necessarily fit into anything I'm particularly writing about, because, you know, they're not relevant to, say, Roswell or the Men in Black. So as good as the stories are, very often, you know, they just end up in a Word document or whatever. But with this book, the theme is any subject. It's just, you know, the date issue is the theme. So that's allowed me to use a lot of cases that, you know, I've never revealed before, because I wouldn't have known what book to put them in. So the book covers everything from, you know, sort of January the 6th might be a crop circle case, March the 4th, you know, might be a contact case, August the 10th could be a crashed UFO, and the years are at random, you know, so March the 5th might be 1957, March the 6th might be 2012, you know, and so I've tried to keep it very varied. So, you know, the first story might be, you know, UFO landing, the next one's a crash, the one after that somebody's seen a dead alien, you know, in a military base. Everyone sort of jumps from one angle to another, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a super interesting idea. It's a ton of fun. And I mean, especially for people who are interested in the topic, or even if they're not, if they're just curious or even just for fun, because then every day you can take the book and look at, well, what happened on this day?
Yeah. I think people like that because sometimes, I mean, the book is quite a long one. It's about 400 pages. So, you know, it's about roughly about a page or so on average per case. And I think when you have a big book, or fairly big book, you know, sometimes people don't want to wade up from page one to page 400. You know, it can take time and they have to go back, you know, and reread stuff to make sure they're following the story properly. But when you've got sort of 365 cases, you know, you can just pick it up on the beach, you know, or out on the couch or whatever, and just dip into it in any random order. You know, I think people do like that at times, and you know, they like just being able to pick something up and, oh, what's this story about and what's that one about, you know, without having to sort of go from page one to 400 in, you know, one go.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to have the book with you right there?
Yeah, I do.
Could you tell us about today's story? So let's do both. So today is actually the second, but this is going to air on Monday. And let's see, what's Monday? I don't even know. People are dying for an episode. I haven't had one forever because we just had the conference and I was so busy. So they're starting to get mad. They start to get mad at me. They're like, "Where's this? You haven't done one forever." So the 6th. So let's read what's on March 2nd first, if that's okay.
Okay. Well, March the 2nd dates from the year for it is 1977, and it deals with like a Roswell-type case, but in the jungles of Peru. And this actually deals with some sort of object that came down in the jungles of Peru in March 1977, which was described as looking like an egg crossed with like a teardrop, that kind of shape. And a number of military people have come forward to talk about this particular crash, claimed to have seen the object, and it had this sort of gigantic, like almost like a torn out piece of metal in the side of the craft, as if it had been sort of violently, you know, affected in midair. Now, apparently there weren't any bodies or crew members, supposedly, but there were sort of three holes which were described as hatches, which sort of led to speculation that, you know, could it have been some sort of escape pod, emergency escape pod type situation. But it's sort of a very sort of fascinating and little known case, this 1977 one from Peru.
That is interesting. Do you remember where that came from?
Well, it's actually, I mean, most of the cases in the book come from my own records, but this one came from an old a journal I've got on crashed UFOs. I think it's like from 1981 or 82, something like that.
That's a pretty weird one. So March 6th.
Right, March 6th.
So for the listeners, that's today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's an interesting one because, you know, the, excuse me. You know the Lonnie Zamora case from Socorro in April 64? Well, this one is also from Socorro, but on March the 6th, 1988. Now, in this one, it was sort of very different to the whole Socorro one in the same town, you know, years before. This one was actually one of the ones that was brought to me directly from a guy named Max Sparks. And he was actually driving through town, and he said he saw this small sort of circular-shaped UFO. It was actually only about 2 feet in diameter, and it flew over his car. As he pulled to the side of the road. He got a flat tire. So he was changing the tire when this sort of 2-foot circular UFO flew over. And he said it was like grey in colour and giving off this strange, like a weird buzzing noise, but quite a deep buzzing noise, where it kind of made him feel a little bit sick as it went over. Now, as I point out in the book, if we saw something like that today, we'd almost certainly say, you know, that's a drone. But this was 1988, so we're talking next year, it'll be 30 years ago. So, you know, I'm not convinced it was a drone. Now, whether it could have been some sort of prototype, you know, classified military thing that was being test flown back then. Bear in mind, you know, we talk about New Mexico, where a lot of weird stuff has been tested over the years. I don't think that's impossible. Or, you know, maybe it was a legitimate UFO, because I actually have in the book about 9 or 10 cases where people had seen UFOs that were only sort of like 2 or 3 feet in diameter, and some of them people describe like something along the lines of like a beach ball size type object, sometimes with spikes sticking out of them, and I think there's 3 or 4 cases like that. So in other words, there's probably, you know, more than a handful of cases in the book where these UFOs that people have seen are actually not just small, but like really small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is really interesting. I know there are some photos that at least, you know, my boss is really interested in too, and they are pretty weird. They come from Texas, and this was a guy who was a guard at and he took a video that I know had gotten a lot of attention a few years ago. But yeah, he also took these pictures. We have a story of these real tiny little things that were flying around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some really weird ones along those lines. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to find your birthday?
Okay, sure. July 17th.
July 17th. Okay, let's have a look what July 17th is. Even I have to check. When there's 365 of them, you know, it takes a while to try.
You can't remember all those?
All right, let's have a look.
It's going to be a weird alien one.
Yeah. Well, that was the day. You know the Serpo story?
Uh-huh.
This controversial story and these sort of allegedly leaked documents about this sort of trip to another world undertaken by U.S. military personnel and then like a team of aliens coming here, kind of like the last few minutes of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, July the 17th in 1965 was one of several dates that have been put forward over the years for when the human team, the astronaut team, supposedly went to that other planet. So that's why I've got it down for that particular day. So.
See, I think Doty made that stuff up, that guy Richard Doty, but he probably, because he knows that I'm so interested in his what he writes, that maybe he used my birthday on purpose to kind of a dig at me. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, that's interesting, though. Now, you mentioned Socorro, and the last one was near there, and that's near the White Sands. You know, where there's a lot of testing. That's actually Socorro's very near the Trinity site.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard of a lot of sightings. Do you think there's more sightings in that area than normal? Because it's not like densely populated, but you hear of a lot of stories out there.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, there's no doubt that over the years, you know, New Mexico has had a huge number of UFO cases.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 40s, you know, there are a ton of reports. Now, of course, the big question is when you're dealing, it's kind of like with Area 51, when you're dealing with places where we know classified experiments and weird looking aircraft are being flown, you know, although there's a genuinely real UFO phenomenon, the big question is, as technology develops, the issue is going to be trying to tell the difference between their UFOs and, quote, our UFOs, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always careful when you're dealing with sort of profound UFO cases in areas very close to not just military bases, you know, that's not necessarily an issue. But when it's sort of classified off-limits places, you know, surrounded by mountains and desert and whatever, then I think we have to be careful what category we put them in. Or if we put them in any category, you know, mm-hmm. this one from Max Sparks, the one in Socorro in 88, you know, he's seeing it in 88, like a 2 to 3 foot circular thing making a buzzing noise and flying overhead, would probably amaze people. Today, it really wouldn't, you know. You'd think, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, somebody's flying his drone around or whatever. So I think, you know, we always have to keep those kind of things in mind when we realize, you know, we're talking about things close to White Sands or close to this base or whatever. But in
right.
saying that, you know, that cannot explain, you know, some of the really good, credible cases that occurred in the late 40s and which are mentioned in, you know, Freedom Information files. Some of those a lot of them are like untouchable because it's clear that we weren't flying things like that back then. So.
Mm-hmm. That's what's exciting about that Max Sparks one, because even if it is, you know, a drone that was seen early on before they were known to the public, that's kind of exciting because, you know, all these military devices like the drones, it's all of a sudden, you know, they're in the news. But they're usually well-developed, and they're something that they're using. So there's obviously some history there that we're not aware of. And so it's exciting, I think, when people say they've caught glimpses of something that was secretive and was advanced and now is no longer, because it lends to the possibility that we could spot something advanced that as
oh,
well.
Oh, yeah, right. You're right. And I mean, you know, we know that when, for example, in the late 80s, when the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter were sort of rolled out, you know, from the hangars and people saw these large black, you know, swept back, weird looking triangular shaped things. You know, we know that they were on the drawing board and in 1975 and in prototype form were flying just a couple of years after that. And we didn't get to know about them until like 88. So in that sense, I'm pretty sure that there are things on the drawing board now that we really don't know anything about. And I'm quite sure that if they're flying around and occasionally they get seen by mistake, you know, that whoever's flying them is quite happy for people to think, oh, it's Little Green Men, because it actually is a good cover. Now, that doesn't take away the fact that there are legitimate, really good, genuine UFO cases. But I think the phenomenon has been, can be manipulated, you know, as a camouflage for classified aircraft flights and that kind of thing. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if that's happened quite a lot, really. And so, you know, the big question is how we differentiate between ours and theirs, you know. And as our technology develops, will we be able to even, you know, sort of figure out the differences or the similarities?
Now, the motivation behind writing the book I can really identify with, too, is these cases that you really love that, you know, you couldn't really put out there or didn't have a way to put out there, and this kind of lent a vehicle for you to do that. Because I've got those favorite cases, too, that maybe I've written an article, but I'm always looking at an excuse to talk about them because they're really good cases that I think people should know about. What is maybe one of those cases in particular that is in your book that you were, you know, really itching to get out to people that you're excited about?
Well, actually, I wouldn't say it's necessarily just one, but there are some of the like really weird and creepy Men in Black cases that I'd never used before. You know, I mean, like I mentioned, you know, when I spoke at your conference last year, there's this perception that the Men in Black, the real Men in Black, are like Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones in the movies, you know, when the reality, they're sort of much creepier and weird looking, you know, like really pale and gaunt and these large eyes they hide behind these big black sunglasses. And what sort of fascinated me was the sort of sheer number of reports that were coming in from various parts of the world. So I've got a number of never-before-seen Men in Black cases from the US, but also from places like Puerto Rico, South America, all over the place. And so I wanted to put those in to, you know, to demonstrate to people that this is like a worldwide phenomenon. And, you know, they come across almost far less UFO-based stories and more like a almost like a gothic horror story. That's so how weird and creepy they actually are.
It's funny you say that, because when I think of Men in Black, because I'm more familiar with the stories and they're so odd, it almost makes me think of American Horror Story, you know, just creepy and weird and just enigmatic and creepy is a good term.
They're kind of like a cross between, I would say they're like a cross between 1950s gangsters and, you know, like some sort of gothic vampire. So they kind of, if you imagine a blend of the two, that sort of, you know, the black fedora and the black suits, but, you know, they look sickly, you know, they look like they're going to keel over kind of thing.
Yeah. And I'll touch on this real quick because I know we're running out of time, but you also have a book called Women in Black. I mean, is it the same for these women in black that have been seen? Are they gaunt and creepy as well?
Yeah, they're sort of pretty much the same, really. And, you know, they turn up in relation to UFO encounters and warn people not to talk about what they've seen, or they try and find a way to get information out of them. And again, they don't look, you know, completely normal, but just coincidentally, when you're on about, you know, you're just talking about articles and so on and things like that, just coincidentally today I wrote an article for Mysterious Universe, which should be up in a couple of days, where I actually made a mention of you because you wrote about it. It was the Jackie Gleason one and and President Nixon, so which is, you know, it's one of those sort of really bizarre over the top stories, but it's one that still makes people think, you know, well, is it so over the top that it could be true? That's kind of like an interesting one.
It is. And I think it was at the Nixon Library I actually went to and got some photographs that are in my story online. Feel free to use those if you want, because it's got Nixon and Jackie Gleason playing golf together.
I saw that. That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess to wrap up, what is your next project? Because you It's just, like I said earlier, it's amazing how much you put out and how many books that you've got. And it looks like, you've got three in just the last like 6 months. What's your next book?
Well, my other big interest is sort of like cryptozoology, unknown animals, and I've got one coming out at the end of August. It's called Shapeshifters, and it's like a history of sort of in culture, history, folklore, mythology of creatures that could change shape. So I've got the obvious ones like werewolves in there, but also like Native American legends of like the coyote and things like that. Skinwalkers. So it's like sort of almost like an A to Z, not an A to Z star, but it's kind of like an A to Z of stories of shape-shifting creatures, if you like, and where the stories came from, and looking at the different theories that again that have been put forward for what these kind of things might be.
And what's the best place for people to find your books? Where would you prefer they go purchase them?
Well, all the books are available on Amazon, and quite a few of them you can get off the shelves in Barnes and Noble, or they can order them in for you as well. And I have a blog called World of Whatever. So if people type in Nick Redfern World of Whatever, you'll see the link to my blog. And people can contact me there, and they can also reach me at Facebook. There are a few Nick Redferns there, but scroll down and you'll find me. So.
So thank you so much for being on the show again. I think everybody needs to go out and get your book. And I can't wait to read what the daily, what the UFO story is. So thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Alejandro. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Nick for coming on the show again. So really cool. This is a great book. He's got 365 days of UFOs, a year of alien encounters. So check that out. You can see what alien encounters might have happened on your birthday. Hopefully you don't open the book, look at your birthday, and then find out that you're the result of some sort of alien encounter. That would be kind of creepy, huh? But yeah, you'll be able to find his book on Amazon or at nickredfern14.blogspot.com. Or you could Google Nick Redfern's World of Whatever, and you will find Nick Redfern's blog page. So, and he's got lots of stories he puts up there on a regular basis. He's just a busy, busy, busy fella. Always got something going on. So, great guy. So thank you so much for being on the show, Nick. Otherwise, all of the UFO news that we talked about earlier today, you will find at openminds.tv. Also, I'll be writing up a story on George Bush. In fact, I'm going to finish that up. So by the time you hear this, the George Bush story will be up, so you'll be able to go see what he said on Jimmy Kimmel Live. So, and also, like I said, keep an eye on our social media. So probably starting tomorrow, we'll be doing some Tom DeLonge giveaways and some discount codes. So when Tom DeLonge's book just does come out, the nonfiction, you'll be able to get a discount on that. So I know many of you plan to purchase it. Why not get it at a discount? So check out our social media for that. Otherwise, the shows. Ooh, don't kill me, but I'm going to be on vacation on Monday. So for next week, I will not be posting a show on Monday, but I will be doing an interview with Leslie Kane. So, of course, we have some interesting things to talk about with her, and we will. But we'll also be talking about her new book. So we'll have some UFO news at the beginning with Leslie. But we're going to be talking a lot about her new book, which is centered around life after death. So I think it's really interesting. I think a lot of our listeners see that it's interesting. But she also wants to share why she decided to write this book and how it relates to UFOs. So I'm very curious about hearing that. So we'll have Leslie Kane will actually be posting it on Wednesday. So as soon as I get back from my vacation, I will work on getting that posted so I can have it as soon as possible. I knew you all probably would not tolerate me not getting out another show next week. So we will have another show. It'll just be a little late. other than that, you know, I'm going to do my best to get back to getting some shows out on a weekly basis. So I apologize for this break. However, it was for a very important thing, the UFO Congress, which went so well. If you want to see the videos of the lectures, you can go to our openminds.tv store. So if you go to the page, you'll see the store and you could get DVDs. Otherwise, you can get our streaming video service. And this is really what I think you should do. Go to openminds.tv and you'll see links for the streaming video service. You'll also see them at ufocongress.com. And we've already got James Fox on there. So you can watch his new lecture about the Phoenix Lights, which included never before seen video of Fife Symington. So, of course, you've all seen some video of him talking about the Phoenix Lights and how he now feels he saw the Phoenix Lights and they were an ET spacecraft. Now, James Fox is a guy who got him to come out about that. So in this video lecture from the UFO Congress, you'll be able to see James Fox talk about that. You'll also see him show some video when Fife Symington came clean. So you'll see that. And you'll see what Fife Symington said, because he said a lot more. He talked about talking to the Pentagon knowing but not sharing information, that he felt like some of the official stuff that came out was bunk. I think that's the word he uses, bunk. So really interesting comments that James has not been able to show the public before that you'll see for the first time in this video. So go to the Open Minds UFO video portal to be able to see that. There's a very low monthly subscription, definitely by far the best deal, because if you want to rent a video, just a one-off, you can. However, it costs about just as much just to subscribe and then have access to everything. We've got hundreds of video hours of videos up there. I think we have at least 100 videos, but we've got a ton, almost 100, if not 100, because we have all the past UFO congresses. And we'll be posting on a regular basis the 2017 UFO Congress videos. James Fox is the first one, but you'll see more as time goes on. So check that out. I think that's it for today. I hope you all enjoyed the show. It's great to be back. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you very much to the listeners who came up to say hi at the conference. It's always so nice to meet you guys and to see you. It's very inspiring. It really helps motivate me to keep doing what I'm doing. And I hope you got that sense. I'm always so busy at the conference, and I always try to take the time to say hello and thank you, and I hope that I did a sufficient job of doing that and letting you know how much I appreciate you. So I do appreciate you all so very, very much. That's it for today. Thank you so much to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. Thank you to Martin Willis for joining us for the news at the beginning of the show. And thank you all so much for listening. I will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.